I want to give you a little tip on how I do it all while keeping my kids happy and content, and that's wearing them in the Ergo Baby Omni 360. I love my Ergo Baby Omni 360 because it allows me to get stuff done while they want to be held. In the 360, you can actually use it from the point that they're that little tiny human nugget that's all squishy and really needy up until the point that they might actually break your back, although there is great support. I use it when they're cranky at dinner time, but obviously someone still needs to make dinner. Cleaning, DJing. Go to fruitsofmotherhood.com/ErgoBaby to get free express shipping on any order. That's fruitsofmotherhood.com/ErgoBaby. Hi, my name is Linda Fruits from Fruits of Motherhood, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Shayna. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a licensed therapist and I'm married, have two little girls. I was born and raised in Miami, lived in New York for the last 7 years. We plan to head down near my family by the time our oldest would start elementary school, but current events pushed up our plan and we moved in August of 2020.
Oh, wow. I'm like your neighbor. I live in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, so we are really close.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so how did you get started as a relationship expert?
So I went to school to be a therapist. I actually was a teacher before I became a therapist. And my students had, there were a few students in the class who had different social emotional issues, home issues, and I realized that I liked sitting with them during recess and helping them organize their cubbies while chatting with them about their lives more than I liked teaching them reading or math. So I decided to go back to become a therapist. And then as time went on, I figured out what specialty I was interested in. And relationships were something that always spoke to me, being the youngest of 8 kids. So relationships has always been a big part of my life. And then dating was a particularly stressful period of my life till I met the right person. And so relationships were something that was always important to me. And taking it a step further into the relationship after having a child. So it was something that I experienced having changes because I met my husband. I thought we are never going to ever have any arguments or fight because I'm a therapist. I know my stuff. I know how to avoid these things. And we are such a good fit and we're not going to have these same struggles that a lot of other people that we see around us have. And life was really good. And then we had our daughter, which was beautiful and amazing, but kids bring new challenges in your life. They make it harder to have some of the spontaneous fun things that you did before they came along. And they bring new responsibilities that suddenly you are each trying to handle and manage. And neither one of you wants to do it because you're both exhausted. You both have your same work lives as before. Life is busy. And so there starts being some little resentment or feeling like one of you is doing more than the other person or feeling frustrated that you have to do so much more. And then I started seeing this pop up in a lot of my client sessions where I was working with a lot of new moms because my specialty was women going through transitional periods of life. So that usually was like either dating, new marriage, new moms, or moms who their kids were leaving the nest and they were about to deal with empty nest syndrome. And I realized that in my clients who were the new moms, they were bringing up a lot of the feelings that I had felt parts of in my relationship, and they were experiencing it in a much stronger degree. And then that, like around that same time, I was in a mom group on Facebook and it has all different kinds of posts. These mom groups are great. There happened to be one post where a mom said that she was, I think, 6 weeks postpartum. She got to take it. She was very hormonal still. And she was saying how she was time with her baby, so you get the baby to sleep. And baby's finally sleeping and her husband's at home and she feels like she's not interested in even going home to him. And it's not that she doesn't love him. She just has zero interest going back home. And a lot of moms were commenting on that. I don't have anything positive to tell you. I've been there. I know how you feel. And I put in a comment of, as a mom, wife, and therapist, I can tell you that your feelings are common and normal and affected by so many different things. And that doesn't mean your relationship is bad. It just means that you may need to work on certain things a little bit more. And I think that was the first reassuring comment in the thread. And I was like, you know what? This is a needed specialty. There's not people talking about this. A lot of moms are feeling alone. A lot of moms feel like nobody else is talking about it. So I'm alone in this. And if I'm dealing with this, that means my relationship is bad and maybe I shouldn't be in it anymore. And that's what led to Love After Baby.
Yeah. And it's wonderful. I myself am so excited to talk to you about this because I experience this. I know my friends do. Everyone's very interested in this topic. So that way they know that they're not alone. Did you already have your kids when this all was coming about?
Yeah, I had my first, not my.
Very cool. Do you still take on clients yourself, personal clients?
Yeah, I do see one-on-one clients. Most of the clients I take on now are less clinical mental health. So A lot of clients that I dealt with previously were dealing with things like anxiety, I think is the biggest one that I've seen. But now it's a lot more of relationship coaching. So that's also opened up a lot more where I'm not limited to only working with clients in a specific state because it's not a clinical issue. It's more the relationship piece of it. And We're able to go into it in a different way than I would be able to as a therapist. So I do use my therapy knowledge and background a lot, but It's nice to work with it more in a coaching setting.
That's wonderful. Most moms know when they feel like they're in a relationship rut, but what are some of the common signs that you see for women who are in a relationship rut?
A big one is when moms say, I'm not sure if I love him anymore or her. Different people have different partners. So if you're feeling like, do I even love them? Why am I with them? If you notice that you're no longer having any time together and you feel like the only thing that you ever do together is taking care of the kids or doing things as a family and you don't ever feel like a couple. If you feel like you're rolling your eyes either internally or externally at your partner, that's a big sign that if you're feeling frustrated with them and whenever they do the smallest frustrating thing, it's you just have this like internal groan. Oh my God, seriously, again, another thing. Those are signs that the relationship's not in the best place and maybe start taking some steps to bring it to a better place.
Okay, and let's talk about those steps because I have to admit that a lot of my posts about my husband sound a lot like what you're talking about.
One of the things I love to say is that it's small things often. And that's something that's a term coined by John Gottman, where when he studied relationships for years, and this is looking at hundreds and hundreds, I think even thousands of relationships, he saw that it's not about the big things. It's not about remembering your birthday or your anniversary. It's about, are you showing respect and kindness to each other? Are you showing appreciation? Are you acknowledging each other? Are you saying hi? Are you saying bye? Are you seeing each other when you come into the room? Are you giving each other an opportunity to express fears, frustrations, needs, wants? Do you have friendships? Do you have positive moments? It's not about those big things if they buy you gifts, which yes, there's the concept of love languages. So if somebody's love language is receiving gifts, it is important for that person to be receiving gifts at some point. But in general, that's not the most important thing in a relationship. It's about having those small moments where you show the person you care about them. And that's going to differ based on what somebody's love language is, because you have to use their love language to show them that you care. Otherwise, you can be showing a lot of care, but if it's not in that person's love language, they won't be receiving it that way. They won't be feeling it that way. If it sounds like all poetic, but I don't know a word of what they're saying to me, unless it's like the five common words that like anybody knows from any sort of popular culture, book or movie. So they can be saying the most beautiful thing to me. I won't understand them. So If you are showing love to somebody, but it's not the way that they receive love or the way that they feel cared for, it's kind of in vain. They're not going to notice it. And our love languages can shift as we go through different stages of life. I know that for me, acts of service was never a big one. As a mom, it's really big. I really appreciate if my husband you know, changes the diaper or like dresses baby while I'm getting dressed so that we can get out of the house quicker. Those little things, they mean a lot more to me than they did before kids.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that at the beginning of a relationship that it's something important to kind of figure out what their love languages are?
Yeah, that's one thing that's important to talk about. What makes you feel loved? What makes you feel cared for? When do you feel heard? It's also important to have these different conversations of what does marriage mean to you? What does partnership mean to you? What does family mean to you? Every time two people come together to form a relationship, you're each bringing in your unique backgrounds, your unique family experiences and ideals and expectations and beliefs of what a family looks like. So that's what contributes to a lot of the fights that parents sometimes have about parenting, finances, different ways of interacting, different ways of socializing with others, ways of having family dynamics. It's because you each grew up in a family that acted and behaved a certain way with those things. And then you expect that other people should behave that way too, because that to you was normal. But if that's not the way your partner's family was, for them, what you do is going to be new and foreign. So you have to figure out together, what's our life going to look like together? So just drawing into it that understanding each other's love languages, it's also understanding each other's expectations and understandings of what life and family look like.
Do you believe that there is only five?
So I think it can sometimes be more nuanced than that. But I think that he does a pretty good job of bringing the five major ones. So there might be something that you really love that your partner can do for you that's maybe not like exactly one of the five, but you could probably fit it into one of those general five categories. Right? So let's say I love when my husband gets along with my brother or that I'm close to. And that's not technically a love language, but it's like maybe it's quality time because he's spending time with my family and the people that I care about. So it can kind of fall into somewhere there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally. Talking about how moms feel touched out by the end of the day. I know that's something that I struggle with. Like as soon as I put the kids down, I tell my husband, I'm like, don't look at me. Don't talk to me. I just need to like be in a vegetative state for 10 minutes and then we could move on. But like half of the time I'm still so tired. I just want to go to sleep. Like, how do you get through that? How do you come out of the touched out phase and make time when you're exhausted?
Yeah. Being touched out is one of the top three complaints that I get from moms. And so one of the important things that I tell them is that you don't always have to be on. So try to find those moments when you might be less stimulated or more available. So for some moms, that's like on Friday night after the kids are sleeping, because like they know they can sleep in tomorrow and they don't have to wait, get ready for work, the kids ready for either going to school or Zoom classes. And study sex once a week, that's the sweet spot. When they have sex more than once a week, the amount of satisfaction increases is really negligible. And they did that study because they based on a study that was done on money, where they researched what amount of money do people need to be happy in terms of not being stressed out? And they saw that when people made more than a certain amount, their happiness did increase, but so minimally that it didn't make a difference. So another researcher decided, I wonder if this applies to sex. And they researched it and saw that sweet spot for most couples is one time a week. So what that means is on average, so there are some couples that to be satisfied may need a lot more than once a week. There's some couples that to be satisfied may need less than once a week. But that's that kind of sweet spot you want to aim for. If it has to be scheduled to make it happen, you can have it loosely scheduled. Oh, let's shoot for the weekend when the kids are napping and like we're both rested and not running to work. Also, you can have other little moments of connection with your partner that don't have to necessarily do with touch. So they could either be lesser touch. So like sitting next to each other on the couch, leaning your shoulder into them, or like even sitting on opposite sides of the couch, like sharing a blanket with each other while you're watching TV. that still feels like you're connected somehow, having a cup of tea and chatting. And it's great to have conversations about different dreams and hopes and things that don't have to do with the kids, because that tends to be what we talk about once we have kids. And so I've started like a new series on my page where I share 10 conversation starters that have nothing to do with your kids. And moms have been loving it. They've been like using it for date night, been getting a lot of positive feedback on that. So those are some other small ways to connect.
I love that. So since we're talking about that, can you give me some more quarantine date night ideas?
Yeah. So I've also had like some date night ideas on my page, and it's all about getting creative. And in general, when you're new parents, it can be hard. Date nights has always been challenging for new parents, but especially during quarantine, it's been more challenging. So you can try like theme nights where like once a week you choose a cuisine of something you want to try and maybe make a new dish together and then eat it together while watching like a movie set in that space. You can go through old and put together a photo album, which is also nice to like those memories. My husband so often its own little slideshow that it makes of a random time or person that it chooses. And we love seeing we've put together these little pictures and video clips from our phones that we don't even remember, and seeing, oh, this happened then, or it's great memories. Having a show you watch together could be something. For some people, they don't feel connected when they're watching a show together. I know that my husband and I do have like our shows that we like to watch together. And if I ever fall asleep and he watches ahead, I feel like he like cheated on me. And I've heard couples where one of them is traveling on a business trip and they have their show they watch together and it airs. So one of them watches it. I can't believe you watched it without me.
Oh yeah, it's totally guilty. Connecting.
And then if like I look at my phone for something while we're watching, then he gets frustrated because it's like our thing we do together. So for some couples that works really well. And cooking, watching something, checking out pictures, doing board games, for some couples that can be a lot of fun. It's getting in tune to what you actually enjoy doing. My husband and I, the other week, we asked our neighbor to just pop in and keep an ear out for the kids because they were both sleeping, and we went rollerblading around our neighborhood.
Oh, that's cute. I love that. Yeah,
it was like a super spontaneous idea initiated by him. He's been initiating more date nights lately, maybe because he hears me talking about this stuff all the time. So there's just, you can get creative and there's different things that you can do. It doesn't have to be something grand. You can once a month try to get really creative with it, but at least once a week, do something that's just like quality time between the two of you once the kids are asleep or, you know, otherwise occupied.
So speaking of your husband, obviously he knows what you do, but let's talk about someone else like me and my husband. Let's say he doesn't know about this and doesn't know that I'm getting started on jumpstarting our love after baby. Do I need to fill him in, or is this something I can do by myself?
So you can really go with it either way. Obviously it is helpful if your partner knows like, hey, I'm about to try to work more in our relationship. And if you can reciprocate, that would be great. Sometimes some moms are like, my husband's just going to roll his eyes at me. He doesn't care about this stuff. Or some moms even complain and say, why is it our responsibility to make the changes? And I tell them, it's not your responsibility, but it matters to you. And somebody's got to step up and do it, right? Mm-hmm. Think about like when you were in school and you have to work on a group project. There's always one person that like took charge, because if they didn't, the project wasn't going to be the quality that they wanted it to be. So is it more important to you to put in more effort to make your relationship be the way that you would like to see it being? Or are you going to like just pout and say, well, he's not putting in the effort, so I'm not going to either. And if he's really not responding to any efforts, then maybe you need professional intervention. But for most couples, relationships are like a dance. So if we're both doing the foxtrot right now, and then suddenly I switch over to ballroom dancing, I don't really, maybe I'm mixing up different ones that do kind of work, but let's say you pick two different dances that are totally different styles. If I suddenly switch, you're not going to be able to keep doing what you're doing without feeling totally off or feeling like we're constantly getting in each other's way. You're going to be forced to shift your steps so that we can be more in sync, so that it flows. So similarly with relationships, if one person starts doing things differently, then the other person's going to be forced to shift somewhat. They might not have as big a transformation as if they were also actively involved, but there will be positive shifts.
That's awesome. No, that makes total sense. I read on your Instagram something about the 5-1 ratio. Would you care to explain that a little bit further?
Sure. So there's a concept of an emotional bank account, and every interaction that we have with our partner can make a deposit or a withdrawal from our account. So when we tell them good morning, there's a deposit. When we make them a cup of coffee, there's a deposit. When we roll our eyes, there's a withdrawal. When we yell at them or snap at them or make a passive aggressive comment, those are withdrawals. When we give them a hug, when we tell them that they look handsome, when we prepare their lunch for them, not that you need to, but I'm just giving examples of different things. So any positive you do makes a deposit. Any negative is a withdrawal. And so you're building up your emotional bank account. And obviously the healthier your bank account is, the better your relationship is going to be. And thinking of an actual bank account, if you have somebody who has a $1,000 balance and they go out and they buy a $50 pair of shoes, that's not going to be a huge part of their account balance. But let's say you have somebody who has a $100 balance and they go out and buy that same $50 pair of shoes. You're going to be like, are you insane? You just spent half your money on shoes. Mm-hmm. But why for the other person wasn't the $50 shoes a big deal? Because they have way more money. So when you think about your relationship, there's no relationship that has zero conflict. If there's a relationship that has zero conflict, that means that somebody there is biting their tongue all the time and feeling like they can't express themselves. And conflict doesn't have to be bad, but there it's natural when you have two different people that there's sometimes going to be disagreements. Mm-hmm. So what you want is that for each negative interaction, there's enough positive interactions there that it outweighs them so that the relationship is still positive. So the 5-1 ratio is that when you're in a moment of conflict, healthy couples have 5 positive interactions for each 1 negative. So let's say I'm having a discussion with my partner and I'm criticizing him for something that I don't like that he's doing. So criticizing is going to be a negative. I'm making a withdrawal. But at the same time, I'm going to try to have, and it's not about being super like conscious of this and starting to count them, but just to give an example, while I'm criticizing, which is the 1 negative, I'm also giving him eye contact, which is a positive. I am putting my hand on his leg or on his shoulder. That's a positive. I am making sure to tell him something that I noticed that he did differently in a good way or something I appreciated while I'm also criticizing something I didn't like. So that's a positive. I tell him that I love you, but I'm just really frustrated about this. That's a positive. So I'm trying to have positives, whether verbal or physical or just body. He's still safe here and I still love him. And this is just a small thing that we're disagreeing about. So they found that in healthy couples, in moments of conflict, for each 1 negative, there's 5 positives. And in positive times, meaning where you're not having conflict and it's just day-to-day life where things are going well, for every 1 negative interaction, there are 20 positive interactions.
Great. So do you feel like you do this naturally now, or do you still consciously have to work on this every day?
I do a lot of it naturally at this point. I think I did a lot of it naturally even before, but I understood it more once I studied all of this stuff, because I am big into reassuring touch. I'm big into using eye contact when talking. And those are just things that make somebody feel like you care about them. There were certain ones that I had to be like, learn to be a little bit more aware of, adding in something you appreciate. Although that's like the same concept that a lot of people learn, where critique, you also want to. Part of it is that we have to remind our partners that even though we're upset about a thing, they're still safe in the relationship. They're still loved. So it's like that concept of, I love you, I just don't like this thing that's happening. unfortunately, very often when there's disagreement, it's interpreted as you hate me, or you don't love me anymore, or you don't care about me. It's not about I don't care about you or I don't love you. It's just that I don't like this thing.
Yeah. My husband too. I tell him when I'm explaining something to him that I'm not mad at him. I'm just talking about how maybe something makes me feel, and that it has nothing. It's not like a personal thing. It's my personal thing.
Right. Right. And then on the flip side, a lot of times we interpret it as when someone does something we don't like, that they obviously don't care about me if they're doing this thing that they know that I don't like. So we have to catch ourselves and be like, are they intentionally going ahead and doing this thing because they don't love us, or they want to show they don't care about what we want or need? Or is it that it's just something mindless that they're doing, that they're not being as intentional as they can be about, and maybe they need to work on being a little bit more intentional about it?
I can't wait till he listens to this.
The classic example of a husband who like throws his socks on the floor, right? And then a wife can say, you don't even care about me. Like, you just, I asked you so many times, you obviously don't care. It's not that he doesn't care. He's just tired at the end of the day. He's taking off his socks. He's too lazy to go walk over to the hamper. It's not against you. It's not, he's thinking maliciously. He's just being lazy. So you can tell him, it would mean a lot to me if you would put in that extra effort to put your socks in the hamper. And if he knew how much it meant to you, he would probably put in a lot more effort.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that. So let's go back to being a new mom. And we know what that comes with, that territory of, it's just the whole ground is broken beneath you. Like, how do you suggest for a new mom to rebuild? What does she need to keep in mind? Some tips, all that.
So one thing is, you know, what they say when you get on a plane, I know we're not really doing that these days, but maybe one day soon, that you got to put on your own mask before helping others. And it sounds cliche, but if you're naturally as a new mom going to be really worn out. So if you don't put in any effort for self-care, then you're not doing anyone a favor. You're going to, you know, take a toll on your marriage. You're going to take a toll on your kids. You're going to take a toll on yourself. So it's really important to try to figure out, what are some small ways I can take a break? Whether that's taking a long bath once a week and having your husband hold the baby and telling, this is something I really need. I just went on a little getaway for 2 days last week for the first time ever. I left my older daughter, and I even brought my breastfeeding baby with me and the nanny. And I went somewhere in driving distance. I got some flack for it on social media, and I was cheering it as like a set, like promoting self-care. And I did get one or two comments initially, and then there were a couple more that said that it was a little tone deaf thing, that there is this pandemic going on and people are in a bad state. And the first couple of times that I got it, I just completely ignored it, because I'm like, there's always going to be people who want to say something negative. And then when I got a couple more, I figured if a few moms are writing this in, then there's others who are also thinking it and not voicing it. So I just wanted to put this out there. And I wrote to them saying how it's important to remember that you don't always know the full picture. And me being a therapist during a pandemic meant that my 2 month maternity leave got cut into 2 weeks before this pandemic started. And all my clients were reaching out desperate to connect, because they were really stressed out by all these overnight changes in the world. And I felt, oh, I'm working virtually and I'm home anyways, and I can't go anywhere anyways. So why not see my clients while like the baby's sleeping? I realized after that I way overdid it for myself. And it's been almost a year in this pandemic world. And I just realized that I needed a break. And two of my local friends, they said, hey, let's rent a hotel room a few hours away. We can drive, take the nanny, and we'll just have this little break. And even there, like, I like saw a client in the morning before we went to the pool, and I saw a client in the evening, just because I couldn't not see people at all. I took the precautions I needed, and I realized that was something I really needed. That getaway was extremely rejuvenating for me, and I worked really hard to make it happen. So that's just a reminder for everybody out there. Don't mom shame, don't people shame, because you never see the full story of what's going on. And a couple people did I mean, I got hundreds of messages after that. You deserve it. You worked so hard. Don't listen to the naysayers or whatever it is. And then I got a couple messages of people who said, I appreciate you writing this because when I saw your picture, I did have that initial thought of, oh my God, this is ridiculous that she's posting this. And then I wasn't going to write anything, or I caught myself like, why are you being so negative? And so I appreciated seeing this and seeing this reminder. So I know we can always all use a reminder to not judge, especially with moms. You never know how much is going on in their lives. But that was an extreme case for me of self-care. I definitely don't do those getaways. That was like after a full year of pandemic therapying with a new baby and a toddler who was home from school because of no school. And but even the little things, just like taking a bath or going on a walk around the block with a podcast in your ears, little things that are rejuvenating for you. And I know I had to make more time for these during the pandemic, where it was funny, it was my first time as a therapist currently going through the same struggle as clients. So kind of I was going through it with them. And I was seeing which things helped me that I could then speak to them and share something for them. And one thing that I noticed is that there are little things in our days that give us energy that we don't even realize that give us energy. And because of our schedule shifts during the pandemic, we were no longer doing those things. And so we were no longer renewing our energy sources with those things. So in my case, for example, I used to walk my older daughter to school and then walk to pick her up and bring her home. So on my morning walk after I dropped her off on my way back home, because even before the pandemic, I was like 75% virtual. I only went into a physical office one day a week. When I would be on my way back home, I would call one of my older sisters and talk to them on the phone for that 15-minute walk. And then at the end of the day, when I would go pick up my daughter, I would listen to a podcast for that 15-minute walk to her school. So those were two 15-minute slots in my day that I was talking to a loved one and listening to a podcast that I enjoyed. And once the pandemic started and I wasn't walking her to school and I wasn't picking her up from school, I was no longer doing those things. And I realized those were two things that really gave me a mental break from everything I needed to do. Because when I was on the phone, I was present in the moment on the phone, just chatting about a million random things with my sister. When I was listening to the podcast, I was able to space out and just listen to whatever the topic of that podcast was. And so I tried to figure out ways to fit that into my schedule a little bit more in this new schedule that we have. So if you can think of pre this new life that we have, were there things that were a little bit more energizing for you? And is there a way to fit them in some shape or form? Then do that. Figure out what is going to re-energize you, even the little bits, whether that's having your coffee alone in the morning, going on a little walk at night, taking a bath, reading a book, listening to a podcast, calling a friend on the phone. Each person's going to have something different that makes them feel energized. So tuning into that.
What is the most important thing that you need to practice every single day?
So I don't know if you watched Bridgerton. I know it's like the new craze right now. And I had a stomach bug over the weekend. So I just binged it after I was like seeing moms post about it nonstop and all these different groups, and a few friends mentioned it. But in one scene, the girl's talking to her mom and she says that she wants a relationship like her and her father had because they seem like they really loved each other. And her mother turned to her and said to her something along the lines of how the relationship wasn't always perfect. Like, it's not like they never had any bumps in the road, but the one sentence she said that stuck out to me, she said, "We chose to love each other every single day." So it's really a daily choice. It's about little actions. And there's this concept of that we're made up of the little habits that we practice. We're made up of every action that we take. So they say, if you want to be a marathon runner, every time that you come to a certain fork in the road where you have to make a decision, should I eat this or eat that? Should I go for this run or not? What would a marathon runner do? So when the relationships wise, what would someone who loves their partner do? What would someone who has in a thriving, healthy relationship do? And let me do that thing. Let me make that choice to love my partner, to make this a beautiful, healthy marriage. because that's one of the best gifts you can give your kids. It gives them healthy social emotional development. It makes them feel safe, and it creates their expectations and their image of what a relationship looks like in the future for themselves.
Absolutely. So then when it comes to argument styles and people fighting, how do you suggest handling these sorts of rocky points in their relationship?
Well, like I said, it's normal for people to have arguments, right? That's a way of life. That doesn't mean that your kids can't ever see you arguing, but you want your kids to see you apologize. You want kids to see that sometimes we mess up, we're human. You know, we're your parents, but we sometimes make mistakes and we're going to apologize for them. So if your kid heard you yelling at your husband or heard your husband yelling at you, you want whoever did, you know, the yelling or whatever, you want your kids to hear them apologizing to you, because you want them to see that it's okay to own up your mistakes and we can make things better. And that doesn't mean we just have to shut down and walk away or end the relationship because it didn't go quite the way we wanted. We love each other. We made a mistake. We didn't treat each other the way that we would really want to. And so now we're talking about it. We're apologizing and we're talking about how we can prevent it from happening again. And we know that it might still happen again just because we're people who make mistakes. But as long as we are breathing, we can always apologize and we can always improve.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me and talking about this. I think a lot of moms, including myself, are going to benefit from this. Before we say goodbye, I just wanted you to tell me what your favorite part of motherhood is and your least favorite part of motherhood is, simply because I want to normalize that it's okay to not have a favorite part of motherhood.
Yeah. So I'm guessing maybe you've had guests who have said this before. I haven't listened to all the shows, but my least favorite part is the mental load that comes along with it. It's just constant to-do list, like mentally, even like the stupid little things. Like I have been putting on the back burner of calling because we just moved, we had to get new furniture and I wanted to switch the color of the bookshelves we ordered. And I was dreading doing it because I knew I would have to be on hold. And that was just like a stupid little thing that's been on my mind that I needed to get done already for a month. And as moms, we have tons of those. I know I need to order new diapers soon, or I know I need to order new clothes soon because the baby is up to the next stage. We have to do all the things in our regular lives, like all the big daily things, all the work things for working moms. And then there are these constant little things that we have to keep track of to do. So it's that mental load that I think is my least favorite part.
I agree. Oh my gosh. You just reminded me I need shorts, milk. And then what is your favorite?
Yeah. So my favorite part of motherhood is that feeling when your kid is sad or crying and you pick them up and you feel like when they're with you, they feel safe. Oh, like you're the world. As long as you're there, everything okay. And I think that's one of the most magical parts. And I don't know if we ever fully grow out of it. I still call my mom when I go through something rough, or having her there. It's just this kind of magical power that moms have. So being the person who has that magic for my daughters, where even my baby, who's going to be one in a month, like even with her, for some reason, my husband will take her from me. She'll be crying. But if I take her, she suddenly all is right in the world because I'm there. And I think that's one, like a really magical feeling.
It is. That gave me goosebumps. When is your youngest birthday? Yeah.
In end of February, literally 2 weeks before the world went crazy. And she was born 2 weeks early, which I was very grateful for, because if she was born on time, I would have been there when all the mess started.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. My youngest is turning one the 9th. That's why I was thinking, I'm like, we have the same age kids.
So you were in the hospital a couple weeks before me.
Weeks before me. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. I can't wait for everyone to listen to this and reap the benefits.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Thanks for having me, Linda.
Thank you. Bye.